Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction. Hi, thanks for joining me for episode 111 of Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. My name is Joanna DeVoe, and I am the kooky creatrix behind Kick-Ass Witch, putting the K in magic, and Hippie Witch, the show you are listening to right now. I also have a free ebook by that name, Hippie Witch, Peace, Love, and All That Good Shit, and you can pick up a copy of that at www.joannadevoe.com or back on the description page for this episode back at Blog Talk Radio. And I can tell right now, I am not myself. I am not going to be able to fake this like I thought I would be able to. You might notice that I'm a little bit off already, not quite as perky as I usually am because I don't feel good. I don't know what happened. It's super ironic because I am kicking off the next round of Sad to Sexy this Friday, and that's all about health food and being healthy, and I woke up this morning, like, shaking. I was shaking all over, and something is not right, so I just don't feel good. Like, my insides are quivering, and I wasn't sure if I was going to make it here to talk to you guys today, but I'm here because I said I would be here, so please forgive me if my energy seems a little off. Normally, this is a show that would probably bring out the goofiest goofball in me, because it's partly to do with sex. Pagan sex magic, really, but not. I'm only going to talk about this in a very symbolic way, so have no fear if you're a prude. I wanted to talk about the great rite as metaphor, and the opposite sex within. And because I wasn't feeling good, I really didn't take notes. So I'm just going to kind of riff on this. I do realize, I have realized in writing the last newsletter and doing my last video and blog post, which was about this, that it's very hard to talk about the masculine and the feminine in concrete terms because I think these things mean different things to different people. And so I can really only talk about this from my perspective, and if this is an interesting subject to you, I encourage you to go off and have a blast researching this stuff on your own or just contemplating what the masculine means to you, what the feminine means to you. The Great Rite is a ritual that some pagans engage in, either in a very literal graphic way, like it's a ritual that actually involves sex, where a man and a woman, the priest and priestess often, are having sex in a circle of people, but in a very, like, ritualized kind of way. That doesn't happen so much anymore. It's largely performed as a metaphor, a symbolic ritual. Typically, the high priestess, let's say, in a group of Wiccans, maybe, would hold a cup or a chalice that's perhaps filled with wine and then dip a sword, which is very phallic, into the cup of wine, symbolizing the great rite, our great ability as human beings to create another life. I'm one of those people that finds these things funny. Just humans, human people, we are funny. And it's funny that we feel the need to act these things out symbolically in addition to ritualistically, in addition to, you know, all of the porn that's on the internet. People love to watch sex and think about sex and talk about sex and ritualize sex and think about the symbolism of it. We're so driven by this. But it's funny to me, you know, it's just odd and hard to digest from a modern Western perspective, a group of people standing around in a circle very seriously and reverently enacting the Great Rite. Stuart and Janet Farrar wrote a great write invocation. They were very into this stuff, and there's a little piece of it that I think helps make it more digestible, even though it's a little, it's very poetic. I only took a little chunk to read to you, because if I read the whole thing to you, out of, you know, not in the context of us performing a ritual, I might, you might fall asleep or just get confused or something. But it says, of the Great Rite, this is part of the Great Rite invocation. In times of old, woman was the altar. Thus was the altar made and placed, and the sacred place was the point within the center of the circle. And we have of old been taught that the point within the center is the origin of all things. Therefore, we should adore it. Therefore, whom we adore, we also invoke. So they were invoking God. They were calling upon God. They were slipping into an altered state of consciousness in which they could touch the divine for a moment in enacting that ritual. I'm not a person who does that, and I'm assuming that most of you are not people who do that. Although I don't, you know, go for it. Knock yourself out if that is what interests you and appeals to you. I just know most of my listeners, this is a very new agey bunch, and most of us aren't in Wiccan circles or ceremonial magic circles performing the Great Rite. But it's fun to talk about. I think that for me, because I found yoga and Buddhism and Taoism long before I discovered Wicca, Wicca did not come off as the exciting revelation that I think it does sometimes when young people stumble upon it as their first step outside the Abrahamic religions they grew up in, or perhaps the atheist families they were raised in. I know there's a lot of people that are drawn. I have a friend who was raised basically by atheists, and she was very drawn to Wicca, which I thought was so interesting. I think we long for a sense of meaning and some kind of religious experience, even when we're raised in a home like that. So I'm always talking about being raised a Christian, but that's another perspective. But if Wicca is where you first learned about the masculine and feminine and the life, death, life cycles of nature and how that applies to your own life in a powerful way, you're probably going to be blown away by it and super excited to learn more. That's what I see when I see a lot of these really young YouTube pagans. You know, it's very exciting. Not that I didn't think Wicca was super interesting and fascinating. I just sort of like, you know, I've taken a lot of inspiration from Wicca. There are things about it I really enjoy, but I really just went straight to witch, which is more about just someone who practices magic. I love nature, but I'm not a part of the Wiccan religion. But I can see the enthusiasm and excitement that a lot of young people have for that when they first discover it, and I totally get why. I think that's what I felt when I first, you know, started getting into the New Age community and learning about yoga and Buddhism and Taoism and all that good stuff. And I think also Wicca, I think it's presented in a way that is much easier to grasp for modern Westerners, you know, than these ancient texts of ancient religion and philosophy from the East. but in the end, on closer inspection, these schools of thought and methods of practice have a whole lot in common. And that is what has always interested me, the commonalities, the way these various belief systems from all around the world continue throughout the generations to explore the same principles and ideas, to uncover really similar truths. They may come to different conclusions depending on the intensity of dogma involved and the corruption taking place in the upper echelons. But it's stunning to see, if you look with discerning eyes, that at the heart of many religions and philosophies, there is an overlap of themes. And I've grown really interested in Catholic imagery in recent years, primarily because I think of my interest in paganism. And so much of the symbolism in Catholicism is very pagan looking to me. And what that form of Christianity has, that the form of Christianity I grew up in was lacking, is the representation of the feminine as being divine. In my church, worshiping Mary was seen as like a sad, misguided abomination, those poor, confused Catholics. My best friend growing up was Catholic, and it was, I didn't get a lot of speeches about how she was going to hell. It was more just like a shake of the head, like, oh, those poor, misguided people. If only they knew the truth. But all that lovely imagery, the stained glass, the candles, the statues, the rituals, that was fascinating to me the couple of times I got to go to church with Katie. But that was all stripped away in the religion I grew up in, Mennonite Brethren, in favor of something far more stark. Our church was literally just like a big all-purpose room. Lots of light, very white, hardly any, maybe like a cross, but hardly any kind of religious symbolism. And any imagery we did have was that of one figure, a male figure, Christ. And the very few rituals we engaged in were very simple and casual and entirely devoted to that one figure. At the beginning, sorry, I keep taking these big breaths. I really am like, my insides are shaking. It's not funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. I guess it's funny that I'm sitting here in the dark, staring into the light of my computer, huffing and puffing in an effort to get this show out on time. Talk about masculine energy. I will do this. I will do it, damn it. I will make myself. At the beginning of my most recent video, I was just goofing around, but I shared this pagan statue that I have that I actually really, really love. And I was like joking, like, it's a pagan sex statue. Bom, chicka, bow, wow. But that statue is actually titled The Great Rite, and it's a symbol of the Great Rite. And I really get a kick out of it. I feel a little bit racy having that on my fireplace mantle, but I also love it because it's actually very beautiful to look at. It's very detailed and well done and not at all cheesy like I think some statues can be. It's very beautiful, and it's actually a neo-pagan version of that classic image of Shakti and Shiva that I think, you know, anybody who's been practicing yoga for a while, for example, has probably come across, or any kind of Eastern anything here in the West. You're going to see images of Shakti and Shiva together in Hindu theology. God is represented as being a balance of male and female, often depicted as Shiva and Shakti. And you will often see imagery of them either coming together as two halves, making a whole, kind of a god figure that is half man, half woman, you complete me, or in the act of making love, usually with the woman sitting on the man in a lotus position. Hopefully I'm describing that well enough to where you can get the image in your head, because it's a really common piece of iconography that you've probably seen a jillion times, especially if you're in the New Age community. You'll see this kind of masculine and feminine being represented in all kinds of religions, especially ancient religions. You'll see it in Taoism, in that classic yin-yang symbol, that Chinese symbol of yin and yang. Yang, if you'd like to say it that way. I say yang because I'm a Californian. It's just that circle, you know, that has the little swoosh down the middle and a dot on either side. It's typically black and white. There was a surfing brand that used that in the 80s, and I can't remember it right now, but you've seen that too, I'm going to guess. I cut and pasted something out of Wikipedia right before I got on the phone with you because I wanted to be able to talk about the yin and yang symbol with some level of articulation on this shaky, weird Tuesday. And it says, in Chinese philosophy, yin and yang describes how opposite or contrary forces are actually complementary. interconnected and interdependent in the natural world, and how they give rise to each other as they interrelate to one another. Many tangible dualities, such as light and dark, fire and water, male and female, are thought of as physical manifestations of the duality of yin and yang. Yin and yang can be thought of as complementary rather than opposing forces that interact to form a dynamic system in which the whole is greater than the assembled parts. Everything has both yin and yang aspects. For instance, shadow cannot exist without light. Either of the two major aspects may manifest more strongly in a particular object, depending on the criterion of the observation. The yin-yang shows a balance between two opposites with a little bit in each. So there, isn't it interesting that if you took out yin and yang, if you didn't keep saying yin and yang throughout, you know, those couple of paragraphs, it would sound like you were describing paganism or witchcraft. Or now what has been embraced by the larger New Age community about balancing the masculine and the feminine, the sacred masculine, the sacred feminine. And that's how I came to witchcraft. That is why when I very, very first started making YouTube videos about being a witch, my history, 20-plus years of exploring this stuff, was largely based in New Age philosophy and Eastern philosophy. And when I discovered Wicca and paganism, I was like, well, this sounds so much like the same thing, but in a different framework. And, of course, pagans embrace this masculine, feminine imagery. And because pagans are so into ritual and giving meaning to our lives through the act of ritual, group ritual especially, we have the great rite. I was recently listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, which I love. I love Duncan Trussell. He just makes me laugh, but he's a pretty deep dude underneath all of the comedy. And he had Lucian Greaves on the show, whose real name is Doug, funny enough. But he's like the main leader in Satanism right now, and that show is especially funny, I think, because the idea of Satanism makes Duncan Trussell a little bit uncomfortable, so he had to make it an extra wacky show, which it is, which did make it more funny. But the bulk of that interview was about how Lucian Greaves headed this project. I forget where, what campus Christians were saying they had the right to put this Christian statue up, and it was about religious freedom. And what Satanists have been doing is going around and really showing Christians what religious freedom actually looks like, because they figure you can demonstrate it in a more impactful way than just talking about the First Amendment, than just, you know, paying it lip service. Show them what religious freedom really means. So they petitioned to have a satanic statue erected right next to the statue of the Ten Commandments, which, of course, pissed everybody off, which was the point. You know, they were trying to make a point. But it was interesting that the iconography that they chose for this statue was Baphomet, which is not a satanic image. I personally think it's very scary looking. It looks scary to me. But it's actually a representation of the masculine and the feminine. And he was saying, you know, he chose that because he wanted an image that people associate with Satanism, but that it's technically a much more ancient icon that represents the masculine and feminine. And they had this whole thing about, but it has naked boobs. So they had to remove the boobs from the statue so that the Christians couldn't protest and say that it was profanity, and then they would have another issue to fight on their hands, because it was really about religious freedom that they wanted to erect the statue. So it's a boobless Baphomet. I don't even know if they have the statue up yet, because they were, you know, raising money for it or whatever. But this is such a big subject, and there's so much I want to say. When I start seeing the time tick away, I'm like, how am I going to fit it all in? ideas about the patriarchy come to mind. I think about how, really, I think in some ways it's easier for women to embrace the masculine within, because I think that we were raised in a very patriarchal system and that we're rewarded for being very masculine. And what I wanted to look at today was about how the great right, I mean, maybe you can create a ritual for yourself that symbolizes that you intend to embrace both the masculine and feminine in your life, especially in the creative process, because both energies are valuable, however those energies manifest for you. But being a woman, that people often, especially like my friends that are very into the goddess, I often get told I have a lot of masculine energy. And I noticed this about my mom and my sister, too. I think this is just how I was raised. I was raised in a patriarchal system and rewarded for masculine traits. So I have a very ambitious, outwardly focused, driven kind of energy that, you know, and it's probably just partly innate, too. Some people are just more masculine than they are feminine. I come across a lot of gay men in the pagan community that are big goddess worshippers, and they really identify with the goddess because they're men who can really embrace the feminine within. They feel their feminine side, which all men have. But I do think it's harder, if it's hard for a woman like me to embrace the feminine and to really understand what that is, and to work more of that kind of energy into my life, I imagine for a really macho man, it must be a big challenge. I think there's a lot of shame placed on men trying to embrace the feminine. And not, you know, to physically objectify the feminine, but to honor the feminine as an energy that they have contained within. I think this is deeply frowned upon in our society, although that is quickly changing. It's just such a slippery slope to talk about. I think the transgender community that's stepping forward right now is actually making a lot of headway. They may feel that they're in the midst of a struggle, and they are, but I think that that's part of giving birth to anything new. And I actually watched the entire interview that Diane Sawyer did with Bruce Jenner, because I had to watch the whole thing. You know, the news, just they're just putting this in your face all the time, and it's just everywhere I turn on the internet. It's like, Bruce Jenner's a woman, oh my God. And I just wanted to have my own experience of his story and listen to it from his own words. So I watched the entire thing because I wanted to understand. It was hard for me to understand how this super macho man, a father of six, who races cars and plays golf, and as a former Olympian was known as the greatest athlete in the world, how does he feel like a woman inside? Like, at first, when that story very first started leaking, I thought it was just more tabloid nonsense. That just couldn't be true. So I was shocked. I can imagine how his family felt, you know. And that interview made me cry a number of times because it was really about soul. And the way he described it was that he has the soul of a woman. And when he said that, I understood. And so I was really glad I watched that. And then just an aside, because I'm always talking about religion here, that's just, you know, an ongoing thing with me, working out my shit here on the radio. but Diane, she quoted a Bible verse from Deuteronomy about how a woman will not wear a man's clothes and a man will not dress as a woman lest they be an abomination of God. And you know, they both kind of had a chuckle over that, because it's clearly, this would not have been in the Bible way back in the day if it was not an issue, if there weren't transgender people or cross-dressers or whatever was going on. Somebody felt the need to write it into the rule book. God frowns upon those who wear the opposite sex clothing. you know, and I just think that's funny. This must be an innately human thing, and we all just have, to varying degrees, the masculine and the feminine within. And how interesting is it that pagans have found a way to ritualize this, even though it is done typically with a man and a woman? There are plenty of gay pagans, and I'm sure they have their own way, even if they're doing it symbolically with the cup and the sword, the chalice and the athame. I think it's interesting to, you know, just to have a small moment to yourself where, I mean, you don't have to interact the great rite symbolically. You can just kind of contemplate it. I think that's what having that sex statue, I call it the sex statue because I think it's funny to call it that. But having that on my mantle, it's a reminder to me. And for me, it kind of means empathy. It's about walking in the other's shoes and learning from that. You know, we can experience each other through sex and the act of making love, which, by the way, are two very different things, obviously. One is physical and one is an expression of the heart. But embracing the opposite sex as a... How am I going to say this? It's not about sex. The great rite is just a symbol. Thinking out loud. Embracing the opposite sex, what that represents. If you're a man, embracing the feminine within and having empathy for that energy that women carry with them, typically in a stereotypical way, or vice versa. If you're a woman, I think can bring a lot of balance to the way we interact with each other in the world, and then, of course, with ourselves. We need both in the creation process. I think about, like, artists nowadays. There's not a lot of representation for writers and bands, for example. They're not handing out publishing deals. So artists who largely represent the feminine act of creation. Creation is a feminine act. It's the birth act. You're birthing something from within. You also have to have the masculine to deliver that out into the world, to get it out into the world. And a lot of artists are lacking that. They're like, wow, I just need someone to represent me. Can't you sell my work for me? Can't you present it to the public for me? And now these publishers are saying, no, we cannot. You have to do that yourself. So now self-publishing and Kickstarter campaigns are all the rage because artists who largely create from the feminine are learning now to embrace their masculine so that they can get their art out into the world. I don't have time to get into, you know, Jungian theory right now, but it's a lot to do with the anima and the animus, the masculine and the feminine within. And I'm not going to pretend that I have a deep understanding of why we need rituals like the Great Rite. But humans have been doing such things for possibly as long as we've existed. And it's interesting how one group's rituals can totally freak out another group. But it's really just a matter of perspective and being privy to the inner mysteries from that perspective. So a Christian, for example, could be mortified to learn that their best friend is going to a, you know, Wiccan ritual in which they're going to reenact the act of sex as a symbol of creation. But then if you flip that scenario around and explain to a pagan who is ignorant of the Christian faith that his best friend is going to a group celebration in which they're going to reenact the act of eating the body and drinking the blood of Jesus, you are going to get a very similar reaction. And really, what is worse, sex or cannibalism? I am kidding. Neither is bad. And humans, for whatever reason, we seem to really need rituals. They help us to process this life. They help us give our lives meaning, a collective meaning, when we come together to perform them in a group with a certain amount of reverence. That's what I'm really interested in doing with the Psycho-Spiritual Wheel of the Year. It's not very fancy and possibly even laughable to someone from the outside looking in. But what I'm looking to do is to show people how they can create meaningful rituals using very basic supplies, a piece of paper, a pen, an eggshell, a piece of string, whatever they have lying around, because it's mostly just about intention and the meaning that you give the moment. And what I'm hoping to impart is how we can just pause in our lives We can just pause for one moment and create a sense of meaning. We can ritualize each turn of the wheel in a small, practical way, really, that helps us transition through the seasons and keep ourselves aligned with our personal goals and our sense of greater purpose. And even though, you know, these interactions as a group really just take place online, you know, we get to do this with a sense of community, and I really love that. So we're going to be doing a magical May braid ritual, like it's a commitment ceremony. I think it's really interesting. We're going to be doing that for the summer transition module, which is all tied up in Beltane, May Day. And we're going to be kicking that off this weekend. So check that out if you're interested. It's at www.psychospiritualwheeloftheyear.com. And I'll be back here next Tuesday. Come hell or high water, shaky insides, out of breath, whatever. I'll be here next Tuesday, noon, talking at ya. Much love. Peace.